The Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:13-37. As word of my teachings and healings spread afar, many came to hear and be with me, so many that it would be necessary to find a place large enough where ones could gather around. And so, in this day which is recorded in your Holy Scripture, I had gone out of town into the countryside, and the multitudes followed. For indeed at this point I had facilitated so many healings which seemed to be of miraculous nature, that I had a bit of a good press, word of mouth, which said, "This is one you will want to hear more from. You will want to go and be in his company to learn from him. You may even want to ask him to heal," and so they did. After I had spoken about the Blessed Ones, I talked with you on that day, as we often do in our gathering now, with questions and answers. And what you have recorded in your scriptures are the answers, the cryptic answers. Ye are the salt of the earth, and you are. I say that to you this day, you are the salt of the earth. You are the liveliness of the Father. You are life, the great spirit of life. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot. For if your seasoning, your salt, has no saltiness to it, it is as the grains of sand on the beach. You would not eat the sand. Now if the spirit, the seasoning, has gone out of your life, how do you put it back? You go back to the source, back to the truth of your being, back to the lucky one, back to the beatitudes which we have been speaking of, and you begin to count your blessings. You begin to count how lucky you are, and the seasoning comes back, the zest comes back into your life. You are the reason for living. Life is of your making. Season it well and enjoy it. Go out on the boat, feel the air, the wind in the hair. Go out on the cycle and feel the wind brushing the hair, blowing it back. Feel the sunshine. Feel the dew if you go out early enough upon the blades of grass. Allow yourself to revel in life. This was my answer to ones who came and said to me, "But Rabbi, Master, life is so complicated. It is so heavy. What is it all about? Why are we here? Why do I have to struggle to put food on the table for my little ones? Why are the taxes so high? There is oppression and the threat of oppression. The Roman soldiers are going to come and take over my village. They are going to take my crops, etc. What is good about life?" That was the question, and I answered, "You are the salt of the earth. You are what is good about life. You have my cryptic answer in your scriptures." Then I went on to say, "You are the light of the world, and you are. You are the light, the Father, the radiance come forth into this realm of experience. That is what you have agreed to do. You have said, 'I will be a light. I will let my light shine. I will be radiant at least once or twice in my life, and I hope you haven't used up your quota.' Now truly I jest with you. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. In other words, as you allow the radiance to be felt within you, and you are living as the seasoning, the spirit of life, your light cannot be hid from the brothers and sisters. It shines as a great beacon. I exhort you to come alive in that light. That is what I was saying then. That is what I am saying now. Allow yourself to know that you are the light. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." In other words, they may see your radiance, your joy in living, and glorify your Father which is in the state of lightness and joy, the state of heaven. I was saying to ones, yes, you have problems in the world. Always throughout the lineage of the understanding of what the world is about, you are going to have and see problems. But you are also going to see that you are the ones who can change all that. You are the ones who can go with a lucky step, a happy heart, even though there may be high taxation or weather conditions which come and wreak a havoc on the crops, or threatening political, philosophical gatherings who want to see things differently than you do. So what? You are the lucky ones. You are the child of the Father. That is what I was saying then, and that is what I am saying to you now. Let your light shine and let heaven be known on earth. Then there was a question about the law as it was written in the scriptures, which we had at that point, those writings which you now call the old scriptures. And there was a question about the law and the prophecies, for what I was teaching seemed to be somewhat different and radical. I was saying that life is good. I was saying there is love. I was saying you do not have to be afraid of another one. You can take the deep breath and you can live as the Father, the extension of the Father in this realm. So ones came and asked the question, but what about the law and keeping to the strictness of the law? And what about the prophecies? Was I here as a prophecy, or were they to believe other prophecies, as you have in this day and time of pending disasters? The prophecies that the age is coming to an end, that the world is going to cease, and there is going to be a new heaven and a new earth. You see, this was prophesied in that day and time as well. For it was then an ending of an age, a time of change, a time of changing of the thinking. And so there were the prophets of doom and gloom who said, you see, the crops have failed. Therefore, it is the beginning of the end. You had better make everything right with your God. You had better attend to the laws, etc. So I said, think not that I come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. In other words, to give fuller meaning to the law. To let you have a glimpse, an understanding, a revelation about what the law, even in its most strict, constrained form, is about. All of the laws, man-made laws, and even as what have in the scriptures of the philosophical laws, are as direction pointers. They point in a certain direction as you have been on the journey of seeking, of wanting to come home. Every law is just a pointer, as you would see the finger which points in a certain direction, or a signpost which points in a certain direction. That is what the laws are about. I came to fulfill the law. I came to give you fuller understanding to allow you to say, yes, this law has a grain of truth within it. So what is it really about? Also to the prophets and the prophecies. What are the prophecies all about? What is the fuller understanding? You are not going to see the ending of the world or this or Holy Mother the Earth in a great cataclysm. You are going to see the ending of the world as you know it, yes, through the transformation of your own understanding and your own realization of who has made the world and who has made the planet upon whom you walk and share life experience. But you are not going to see a great catastrophe such as some have prophesied. You don't have to walk the rest of your life in fear. Allow yourself to fulfill the prophecies, in other words, to take the fuller understanding. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot and one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all will be fulfilled. In other words, nothing of the strict law is going to be passed away until you have the fuller understanding of it. Then the law passes away, for it will no longer be needed. Whosoever therefore shall break one of these least commandments, and shall teach men so, he shall be called the least in the kingdom of heaven. As you are abiding in a place of little understanding, the least of the commandments, you are not going to be in the kingdom of heaven. You are going to be still in constriction, fear, worry, doubt, confusion. And as you teach others the constriction, fear, worry, either by word or example, then you continue to dwell in that consciousness as you give forth the teaching, and others have the opportunity then to be in that place also. But whosoever shall do and teach them, the same shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. You shall be great, not puffed up as in the ego sense, but great meaning immense, vast, unlimited, in the kingdom of heaven, because you will be abiding in heaven yourself, knowing the fuller understanding. For I say unto you, that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Now, the scribes and the Pharisees had it all down in that day and time, what the law was about and what the prophecies were, and they knew it all. It had to be handed down to them. They had it written and rewritten, copied and recopied, and they could tell you exactly where you were transgressing if you did not even breathe correctly. But your righteousness, I say unto you then, and I say unto you now, must exceed their righteousness, otherwise you shall not know heaven. If you are so busy looking to the letter of the law, watching every detail and being worried should you transgress, you cannot be abiding in the place of heaven, the place of peace. Then there was another question asked which had to do with killing. And I said, you have heard it said, that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not kill, and whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you, now, They were asking about killing because of the various slayings by the Roman soldiers who were in the countryside. There were occasions when ones were requested to release the body. Notice how I put that. Requested to release the body. There were also the roving bandits who wanted to view the material possession, the gold coin, and if it did not suit them, they also would make motivation for you to release the body. So there were ones, as in this day and time, who were releasing the body through very quick, violent means. Whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of judgment. The judgment, as it was asked in the question, had to do with eternal judgment and damnation. The belief that God would forever send you to a place where you would be purified over and over and over by the fires of hell. The truth of the statement is that if you request from another one to release their body, you are going to keep yourself in judgment as you understand the appearance and outcome of that choice. So there is judgment, yes, and you may carry the perception of what has happened throughout other lifetimes with you a certain baggage. You have come unto this lifetime with certain baggage of perception, certain core beliefs which you carry, certain beliefs which you are now in the process of re-examining and looking to a fuller understanding. But I say unto you, I said this then and I say this now, that whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, a word of condemnation, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire. In truth, you will be in danger of the judgment, for when you are angry with someone, where is that anger? What is happening in your consciousness? You are the one who is in judgment. You are judging them, you are judging yourself, and you are in the place of hell fire. Therefore, if thou brings thy gift to the altar, and you remember that thy brother has aught against thee, or that you have aught against your brother, in other words, if you come and you are still thinking about what he said to me, or what they said to me, or what they did last night, leave the gift before the altar and go thy way. First be reconciled unto the brother. In other words, go within and ask, what is truly going on? How do I feel about the other one? Why do I feel that way? What do I feel I need? For it always comes from a place where you feel there's an emptiness, a hole, a lack of love. In truth, what is happening is, I want to know more love. It has nothing to do with them. In truth, it has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with a perceived hole, an emptiness which you are looking for someone else to somehow fill, or you are asking the world to be a better place, or the neighbors to be more considerate, or the biological siblings to love you more, understand you better, etc. It comes from the place of wanting to feel and know holiness, to know how loved you are. Then when you reach the place of reconciliation, the place where you understand, I am loved, so greatly loved of the Father that it matters not what anyone else does, I don't have to worry about that. I am the lucky one. I am so loved. Then bring your gift to the altar. For indeed, already when you come to that place of reconciliation, that place where you know yourself to be whole, already you have put the gift upon the altar. Agree with thine adversary quickly while you are with him. For indeed, if you do not agree with him while you are with him, you are going to carry the argument with you wherever you go. Therefore, agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge. In other words, as you are carrying with you all the feeling of non-agreement, you have taken yourself to the judge. You are already standing before judge and jury and sentencing yourself, and you are already cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out of the prison of that judgment till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. We are speaking here not of a prison made with walls. We are speaking here of a prison of your own judgment. You will not come out of the prison until you have paid the uttermost farthing. Not until you have gone within again and looked to see what is underlying the judgment. What do I feel I need? What is missing? What do I feel is lacking? It always comes back to the untrue self-image. Then there was another question which was asked. It had to do with adultery. You have heard it said, Thou shalt not commit adultery. For you see, the Sermon on the Mount, as it has come to be called, was a discussion in that afternoon which went on into the evening, of the laws and the commandments and the Ten Commandments as you know them now. Thou shalt not commit adultery, but I say unto you, that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. In other words, it doesn't have to be the physical act. It is the thought which detours you from the focus of the truth of your being. You have strayed from the straight and narrow. The question to be examined is, what would you seek to gain by the act of adultery or the lustful thought? What would it fulfill that you have not, in truth? So I went on to say in a certain symbolic way, that if thy right eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. In other words, if your thoughts are leading you from the one focus of knowing and realizing and expressing the truth of your being, cast that thought out, cut it out. You have the saying in this day and time, cut it out. That's all it means. I did not mean for you to physically take out the eye. If you take out the eye, where is the thought? It is still the same. It is the thought which you want to cast aside. You want to first understand it, then you can release it easily. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should be perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. In other words, quickly catch the subtle thought which says, I don't have, I am not, I need, whatever I am perceiving someone else to have or to be. And release that thought quickly before the rest of your consciousness be cast into the hell of false desire. And again, another example. If thy right hand offend thee, cut it off and cast it from thee. For it is profitable for thee that one of thy members should perish, and not that thy whole body should be cast into hell. I see that one who made the notes of my messages was quite taken with that revelation, since they wrote it down twice. It has been said, whosoever shall put away his wife, let him give her her writing of divorcement. But I say unto you, that whosoever shall put away his wife, saving for the cause of fornication, causes her to commit adultery. This was in a day and time when a wife was looked upon as a possession, the same as the cow, the cattle, the sheep. Anything which was owned as a man would own something. You have seen a bit of revolution which has come into this day and time, where those of you activating the female body have said, the spirit of me is equal to any spirit which activates a male body, and if you don't believe that, I'll show you. The law was that whosoever should put away his wife for whatever reason, perhaps he wanted a younger one, a stronger one, etc., would give her a writing of divorcement which said, in effect, I no longer own you. Someone else can have you. But I say to you, that whosoever shall put away the wife, saving for the cause of fornication. Now that part was put in there because it was believed that man would plant his seed in woman, such as he would plant the seed out of the field. The woman would nurture it within the body, and allow it to be born. It came forth from the woman, therefore she had to have some part in it, but it wasn't seen to be a great part. The lineage of the family was seen to be important. Therefore, if a man felt that he had planted his seed within a woman, and she was going to give birth to it, he wanted to say, that is my lineage, and claim it as a possession. So it was something which was guarded. It was something which was seen to be of value in the world belief. But I say to you, saving for the cause of fornication, sexual intercourse other than between a man and his wife, causes her to commit adultery, and whosoever shall marry her that is divorced committeth adultery. Now, what I spoke in that day and time was radical. What I am speaking in this day and time is radical as well. For I took the commandment one step further than the law, and I said, look, even if you give her a writ of divorcement, you are causing her, if she still loves you, to commit adultery. And anyone who marries her is committing adultery because she still loves you. No matter that you put it in writing that you want to get rid of her, I said, wake up and smell the roses. Look at love. That is your touchstone. That is the bottom line. So we had quite a discussion about adultery, and you have a piece of discussion in your scripture, just a piece. Then there was another question which asked about swearing an oath, such as, I swear unto you that this is true. I swear by all my ancestors, by the spirit of my ancestors, etc. And once wanted to know, what was the most powerful oath? In other words, if I swear to you by my ancestors, if I swear to you by the spirits of my ancestors, if I swear to you by the gods, etc., which oath is the strongest? That was the question which was asked. It was sort of like playing one-upmanship. I swear to you. Well, I'll better that one. I'll swear to you by, etc. Again you have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, Thou shalt not forswear thyself. In other words, I'm not going to say, I swear on my word, because you are not going to take my word. I'm going to have to pick somebody else with a little more authority. It has been said, Thou shalt not forswear thyself, but shalt perform unto the Lord thine oath. In other words, I swear by God Almighty. But I say unto you, swear not at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by the earth, for it is his footstool, neither by Jerusalem. That was my favorite. I swear by Jerusalem. It is still used in this day and time. For it is the city of great king. Neither shalt thou swear by the head, because thou canst not make one hair white or black. But let your communication be, yea, yea, nay, nay, for whatsoever more than these cometh of evil. In other words, anything more said can lead to confusion and further argument, so let your communication be a simple yes or no. This is some of what we talked about that day on the mountain. What you have recorded are my answers and only a bit of my answer at that. And those of your brothers and sisters who will take the holy words and go by just what those words are missing the fulfillment of the law and of the words.